are again, ladies and gentlemen, another fine episode of Lawyer's Road Review. This time I've been encouraged to do something about television. One of my 30 followers, thank you all out there, all 30 of you, suggested that I do something about TV, and I got to thinking about it. There's quite a bit, really. I had a TV in my house since the Kennedy funeral. My grandfather had won a black and white television in the salmon fishing derby out here in Puget Sound. He caught the largest salmon, so he got the TV. And that meant that there was a whole lot of people in the house all the time. So he eventually gives it to us when it's time to watch the Kennedy funeral. That's probably my earliest memory, is that event. I'm told that my first words were Alka-Seltzer. And I don't know if you remember, but there was this cute little pill-like boy who sang and danced, and he sold Alka-Seltzer. And apparently that had quite an impression on me. I saw the Beatles live on Ed Sullivan, 1964. That is a memory burned into my consciousness. And so when I see it, you know, the pictures of it, I go, oh, yeah, I was there. So as the 60s progressed, though, the shows got more varied. There were still only three stations, you know. There are three networks, ABC, NBC, and CBS. Now, the dial had this UHF setting, and if you went to move it to that, click, 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 you got this sort of snowy thing. You could see there was something being broadcast. And I think UHF must have been like the beta tapes of its age, right? This was probably supposed to be better engineering, but somehow VHS won out. And now it's all history, right? It's all digital at this point, just like this podcast. Anyhow, so we're watching TV, and there's all these shows that come on, you know. We never watched any of the Westerns, no Gunsmoke, no Bonanza. Here Come the Brides was set in Seattle, so of course we watched that. But mostly it was science fiction. I mean, my parents got me up to watch Star Trek, even though it was, you know, like past my bedtime. They wanted me to see this. This was cool. And I agree. You know, we're living in an age where, you know, even though that television show started 50 years ago, there are people that dress up like it and go to conventions and know all there is to know. If you listen to a podcast about Star Trek, you really, really are a nerd, because these people, you have to have watched absolutely every episode of everything they've ever done in the past 50 years, or you're going to be lost. You're going to be lost. But back in the 60s, it was pretty straightforward, right? It was, you know, 1 hour, once a week, you know, this is what you get. And I came to realize very early on, not only with Star Trek, but other shows, that if you're an extra and you're going to be named Patterson and you're going to die. In fact, you're going to die before the first commercial, okay? Here's Kirk and Spock and maybe Uhura, and they're getting on the transporter pads, and they've got a guy with them, and his name is Patterson. And I'm thinking, no, man, don't get on the transporter, because you know that as soon as you get down to the planet, something bad is going to happen, and then they'll go to commercial, and that'll be the end of your television career. Same thing with Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea. There's always some guy, his name is Patterson, sometimes his name is Malone, right? But he gets trapped in a watertight compartment as the submarine is flooding and dies before the first commercial. I watched Lost in Space, too. That was good. That was a great theme song. Do you remember that? Right? And you had this cast of characters, this Swiss Family Robinson, right? Instead of being lost at sea or on some island somewhere, no, they're lost in space. All because of Dr. Smith. He did something at the beginning. I literally saw the first episode where he did something to sabotage the thing. He probably was a communist. I mean, that was the idea, right? So he was always being called on the carpet by the robot, if you remember that guy, right? This sort of washtub character who had these arms that would stick out and cry out, "Warning, warning, aliens approaching," whenever there was danger. You know, ever notice how many times people came up with robots that were just ripoffs of Robbie the Robot from, what was the name of that movie, Ben? What was it? Forbidden Planet, that's what it was. Yeah, right, Robbie, right. And you want real sci-fi, go back to that, okay? All right. Meanwhile, we're stuck in the 60s, not in the 50s, and we're watching the robot and the scientist who's mad play off each other. I recently saw this in syndication. It's crazy, right? There's this family, right? They got two girls and a boy. It's June Lockhart and her husband, you know, Mr. Robinson. But there's this pilot. His name is Major Don West, you know, and he's the only eligible male, right? Who's clearly the implications here is that one day he will mate with Judy Robinson and they will plant the seed of humanity on some far-off planet. They didn't say that, and it's refreshing that they didn't. I think today you'd probably have the episode, you know, where they, you know, they wind up in the sack together, or they start with it in the sack or something like that. I don't know. I don't know what's happened. All I know is that I have to say that the gender roles that we have gone away from since the 1960s are well taken. What literally happens in this syndicated program I saw was the men were getting their ray guns together because there were some aliens or some noises or something like this behind these rocks, and they're going to go fight these aliens, and it's all very exciting. And June Lockhart turns to Penny and Judy and says, "We'd better get dinner started, okay? Because the men will be hungry when they come home from fighting the aliens, right?" We've gone away from that, and it's doubled our numbers to fight aliens, and I think that's great. I think it's good. I also have to say that when I was a boy, I watched Perry Mason with my dad, and this seems really strange because he was a lawyer or in law school, and I was just his son. And then we wound up practicing together, and we began together with Perry Mason, who never lost a case, which is a really bad lesson for any lawyer to have. He had a secretary. Her name was Della Street. And I have to say that my dad's secretary for almost 30 years, Bernice Heap, was so much like Della Street. They were like cut from the same cloth. It was just very refreshing. Bernie and Della were well-groomed. They were competent. They were prompt, and they were loyal. It was great to practice with them. We did not have a Paul Drake, though. We had no muscle sort of driving around in a large convertible and interacting with witnesses and things of that nature. Perry Mason ends with these three law books piled up. I think they were Corpus Juris Secundum, and that music playing that just scared the hell out of me, right? Yeah, when you're 5 years old, right? Yeah, it's too much. But mostly it was science fiction. We watched science fiction, and we watched space shots, and watched the moon shots. But I'll never forget that marvelous afternoon in July of 1969. And I'm sitting in this very house that this broadcast is being made with my grandmother. And we sat there all afternoon to watch Neil Armstrong descend the ladder from the landing module, plant a foot on the moon, and say, "One small step for man, one giant leap for mankind." Then he planted the flag of the United States there in the barren waste of the moon and left us proud to be Americans. We'd beaten the Russians. We'd shown we really were the best. It was a warm moment in television with my grandmother and the rest of the country, the rest of the world, we were really great. And it's a day that I just can't get back. And it's a day that closed out television in the 1960s. Thank you very much. You betcha. And now a word from our sponsor. Lawyers Road Review doesn't actually have a sponsor, so I've made a few up. Thank you. Have you ever felt out of sorts? Not really yourself, but you couldn't quite put your finger on it. Ask your doctor about Ambiguous. Ambiguous can help you live a life to the fullest, knowing at all times just how you feel. Ambiguous should not be taken when you feel happy or at times when you have cause to be depressed and are sad. Ambiguous should not be taken at times of anxiety or when under stress. Do not take Ambiguous when boarding an aircraft. Avoid alcohol when taking Ambiguous, and ask your doctor before having sex while on Ambiguous. Should you have an Ambiguous lasting more than 4 hours, call your doctor. Ambiguous should not be taken before viewing a fireworks display or any other environment where you expect spontaneous acts of joy and say things like ooh or ah. Ask your doctor about Ambiguous. Ambiguous can help you live a life to the fullest, knowing at all times just how you feel.